Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. That was a butt-whooping. That was a butt-whooping of epic proportion last night. Preds fall to John Hines and the Minnesota Wild 6-1 last night, and it could have been worse. It could have been 8-1 if there weren't a couple goals that were called back for goalie interference. It was rough from the very beginning. The Wild were putting it on the Nashville Predators. An awfully physical, an awfully chippy game, which, of course, we will get into, maybe going over the line of physicality. We'll get into that. But overall, that looked like a Nashville Predators team that looked like they were skating through peanut butter, and a Minnesota Wild team that said, you know what, we have a new coach, we are re-energized, and we are coming out here to fight. That seven-game losing streak is not who we are. We're coming back to win hockey games, and it looked like it. That looked like a Wild team that was fired up and a Preds team that, to take Andrew Brunette's term, sleepwalking.
Yeah, they were sleepwalking, and they got took behind the woodshed. And whatever they did, boy, oh boy, they got it. And it wasn't pretty. It started early, and it didn't let up until the game was over with. They managed to score a goal, which is, you know, good. You don't want to have a goose egg.
One's better than zero.
But, you know, the Minnesota Wild came out, and they played much faster than the Nashville Predators. I didn't expect that. I can possibly, when you go on a win streak and you run into a team like the Wild that just changed coaches, you expect that you're going to get their best. And you know, just because of the newness of a new coach and everybody's ready to go, you know, the likelihood of you winning is, you know, it goes down some. But I didn't expect it to be like that. You know, they basically outplayed the Nashville Predators. They were a little bit more physical. I'm not even talking about the hit. That was just egregious. But they were a little bit more physical. It just reminds me of the time when I used the firecracker and put it on my sister's shoe while my parents were gone. And it burned her shoe and ultimately burned her skin, too. And boy, oh boy, my pops wasn't happy. He wasn't happy when he got home. And I got it big time once they came home from the hospital.
Oh boy.
And that's how the Wild did the Predators. They just basically just like.
Gave him the hot foot.
Exactly.
The old hot foot.
Gave him the old hot foot, boy, I tell you. But I expect them to bounce back. They got a back-to-back this weekend, but I expect them to bounce back.
Look, Andrew Brunette said it. At the morning skate, he said, you're going to face a very hungry, desperate team tonight that just changed coaches. They sent a shockwave through the locker room, and they're going to try to get back in this thing. Their expectation is to make the playoffs. And if his team doesn't match that, then you're going to see what happens. And that's exactly how it played out. The game got away from the Predators early, and there were some reasons for that that didn't help the Predators. But before we get into some of those other things, the Wild were just the better team last night. The Wild were they were better than the Predators in all aspects. They had a better battle level. They had a better execution level. And you put all that together, and, you know, you get 6-1. So I think this is my big thing going forward. It just shows you that if you don't bring it every night in this league, especially if you're not a loaded team, there are some teams, you know, pick one, you know, a powerhouse team like, say, Vegas or somebody like that, or Colorado. You could have a night where you don't have the great battle level, but your skill guys just make unbelievable plays and take over the game. That can happen sometimes. Or your goalie can bail you out. Mm-hmm. And last night, Nashville's goalies didn't bail them out. But by and large, if you don't bring it, you're going to lose. So I think it was the way they lost that really bothered Andrew Brunette. But they're in a busy part of the schedule. If you think about it, they've been playing every other night now for about 2 weeks. And that's tough. You don't get to practice very much. You don't get to rest a whole lot. And when you're winning, you're in that rhythm, and I think they use that to their advantage. But I'm concerned now going forward because they've got an even busier part of the schedule coming up. Can they get back to that energy level, that compete level that gives them a chance to win? That'll be challenging because they got back-to-backs coming up Saturday, Sunday, and then they just keep right on going. Every other night, another back-to-back in there. They've got a couple more weeks before they actually get a little break in the schedule. So I think that's the challenge going forward here.
And you've got a really good team and yet another ex-boyfriend coming back in town. Yep. With Peter Laviolette and New York Rangers coming back on Saturday. I do have to give Jared some credit. He started his show yesterday and said, I guarantee that the Wild come in here and beat the Predators. And I'm driving in my car thinking, Jared, you are so dramatic. And I still believe that. I still think he's dramatic. But at least Definitely. He was right there. He was correct. And it looked like it. It looked like a Minnesota Wild team that was, to Jared's point, he said, I don't think John Hines is going to go in that locker room and say, you need to win this game for me. But it did kind of feel like that's kind of how they were playing, maybe with a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder.
And they're better than their record. I think even you look at
their
record and you say,
streak. Oh,
the Wild aren't very good. But really, if you look, that's a better roster. That's why they changed the coach, mm-hmm. is they've underperformed.
Yeah.
And over 82 games, usually, if you're a good team, you start to play better. Edmonton
just needed
won again
voice.
Last night, by the way. So they got their little shock mm-hmm. When they hit rock bottom, fired the coach, and they've been playing better. I'm not saying that when you change the coaches, you automatically start playing better, but at some point, a good team starts to be itself to mm-hmm. some degree, right?
Yeah, because sometimes you just need a new voice in a locker room, or you know, you just need a new leader, whether it be within the team or on a coaching staff, and it seems like that's what the Minnesota Wild – you know, what they got. It's sort of reminiscent to the Preds last year. I know they didn't change coaches, but they had a lot of changes within their locker room, guys getting traded. And lo and behold, this team, for whatever reason, they banded together and they started playing a lot better hockey. So that's almost, especially like what Willie said, this is a good team anyway. It was just, you know, for whatever reason, and a lot of it was the goalie. Of the Minnesota Wild, they were not winning games.
Right.
And he played much better last night.
He just so happens wants to play good the night he comes to Nashville. So I think moving forward for that team, making the change probably was for the better. But again, I look at the Nashville Predators. It's going to be tough on the next 2 days because they have back-to-backs. But I expect them to play a lot better. Because that was embarrassing, I think, for the whole locker room.
There were so many Minnesota Wild fans at Bridgestone Arena last night that whenever the Wild scored, it almost sounded like the Predators scored. Because
it was weird. I didn't think there were that many, but it was...
It was loud.
You hear them more when the home team's really not doing anything.
Right.
And that's kind of part of what was happening. I think it's kind of fun when you have a small pocket of the other team's fans in a really good game. It just
when it's so back and forth,
right?
The energy
it gets the
is
it
high.
Gets the whole energy as a whole up more.
But it feels a little bit more depressing whenever it's a quieter night, whenever it's not super popping.
And I don't want to act like this is you know making excuses or anything, but I do feel like when you play so many home games in a row, I think even the crowd gets a little fatigued. I think so, there's some people going, I'm a season ticket holder. I love this team, but man, we've been coming here every other night. And we've had Thanksgiving. That's just a lot of hockey. Mm-hmm. You got to be a diehard. I admired the fans that stayed all the way to the end. I'm like, look at these. Like they scored a goal. Connor Dewar, who is he's a fourth line player.
Right.
He got a hat trick last night, and then he scored a fourth goal that was called back because of offside, and that was late in the game. And I had to laugh. They had a review. They waved the goal off, and then the handful of diehards are there. They went wild. Like, yes, no goal. I was like, yes, you are a diehard fan.
Yeah.
That is what it's all about right there. Great job.
We don't want any more insult to injury. And we'll
right.
take that. But here's my thing with the Predators. It was a bad game last night. Mm-hmm. It was a bad showing from them last night. But I don't think that this is a bad team. I was teetering on labeling this team maybe not being so hot on that 5-10 streak, on that 5-game losing streak. I think that 6-game win streak assured me, and probably assured a lot of Predators fans, probably assured that locker room that, look, we can win hockey games. Like, we are a good team that can beat good teams. It was a bad night last night. And it's now, how do you respond? We talked to Elliot Friedman about this yesterday, about the streaky tendencies of the Nashville Predators. How when you have so much newness, you're implementing a new system, you have a lot of young guys that by kind of de facto are very streaky when you're young and you're new and you're figuring out what your role is in a team. Those streaky periods they're inevitable. It's going to happen. We say it about Philip Forsberg all the time. He himself is a personification of that we can see a super hot Philip Forsberg, and then we can see Philip Forsberg just kind of not really do much there for a while. The key here, I think, for the Predators is don't go on a streak. You can lose a game without losing 4 or 5 in a row.
Yeah, that's where consistency comes in, right? And that's where your veterans today, when they meet, they probably won't go real hard on the ice with all of the games that they've got coming here. But Andrew Burnett said, you know, we've got to really bear down when we meet and we're going through video. Mm-hmm. We've got to take mental reps. We've got to make sure that we've got our game together. But that's where leadership has got to step forward here and sort of reset everything when you got a great team coming in tomorrow.
Is there anything you're concerned about, Willie? And I get it. It may just be an outlier. The score just may be an outlier because we looked at Soros. Soros.
Yeah.
We look at Soros and over this winning streak, and he's been damn good. But for whatever reason, it just wasn't his night last night. But is there anything we need to be concerned about moving forward?
I think the number of games they've got coming in the next couple of weeks is a concern. And they appear to have lost Alex Carrier. Now, you know, they're not going to say what it is, but if you watch the play, I think you have a pretty good idea of what happened. And so they may be without him for a while. So that's he was really playing well. So that's a concern. And you mentioned it, you know, Juuse Saros looked like he was getting on a good roll there. And I'm not putting that loss on him last night, but he was not. I was hoping, you know, when you're down a little bit, your energy level's down, you're not playing well, you're flat. You know, that's where a great goalie can, you know, some nights keep you in a game. And so there was a lot of things that made it a little too easy. I think that's what Andrew Burnett was upset about. Not that the winning streak lost, but he said something after the game at the press conference. He said, I knew it was going to be a tough game, but I'm disappointed in how easy it was for the Wild. And
it did look easy.
It was too easy. Now, I think if you go back, and this is a what if, I don't think they didn't deserve to win the game at all. But what made it a little easier for the Wild, Kirill Kaprizov hits. First of all, the Predators get an early power play. They don't score. The guy comes out of the box, and on the continuation, Dewar scores his first goal. And so all of a sudden you go from being on the power play, a chance to take a control of the game, which the Predators have been doing really well overall this year. They've been jumping out into leads and playing from ahead. And instead, the Wild make a big play. That gets their confidence up. Then right after that is the Kaprizov hit on Carrier.
Dirty hit.
Carrier's out. Kaprizov should be thrown out of the game. What they should do there, and Andrew Burnett said it.
At least a 5-minute major.
Ryan O'Reilly said it. They should call. They have the ability to call a 5-minute major and then go over to the monitor and say, okay, let's take a look at it and see if we're right. And if we're wrong, we'll wipe it out and we'll play on. They didn't do that. They just called a 2-minute minor. So Kaprizov just goes into the box, spends his 2 minutes. Carrier's done. Kaprizov, their most electrifying scorer, stays on. Then Minnesota scores a goal. It's challenged for offside, and it is very, very close. I think the play was offside, but I don't think they had to look to have it be conclusive. The goal counts. So then there's a delay of game penalty for that. Mm-hmm. And they score again. And who scores? Kaprizov. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden it's 3-0. And you're like, what happened?
Yeah.
We're down 3-0. What happened? You know, that they never recovered from that.
And you mentioned the hit. It was a dirty hit. Right to the head. Alex Carrier didn't even have the puck. And I am shocked that he just got called for a two-minute penalty. And it's not just us sitting up here, you know, a convenient way to say, well, that was a dirty hit because this team lost. No, there are two people that had very strong reactions to that hit last night. Two people that don't traditionally get as fired up as you maybe might hear them in their reaction to this clip. Hal Gill and Roman Josi, both of their reactions to that Kirill Kaprizov hit on Alex Carrier last night.
This is exactly what the NHL is trying to get out of the game. Yeah. The hits to the head. Roll the clip. This is embarrassing that this was not a five-minute major. Kaprizov should be out. Carrier doesn't have the puck, and he finishes through on his head. This is highly illegal. This is what the NHL has been getting rid of for how many years now? This is old school, and I hate to see Carrier going off the ice. It's just such a dirty hit, and as a hockey player, you have an obligation to protect someone. If they don't have the puck, you can't hit them, and if they don't have the puck, you certainly can't hit them in the head. The refs should have made this call, and it's embarrassing.
Did you see the hit on Carrier, and what did you think of it if you did?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a bad hit, honestly. Like, he's in a vulnerable position, and there's no reason for Kaprizov to hit him there, hits him right in the head. I think those are the kind of hits you don't want in the game, and... the way I saw it, I thought it was a really bad hit.
It was a bad hit. Again, that was Hal Gill and Roman Josi after the game. It was a bad hit. And Hal said embarrassing. I think it was embarrassing.
And you got to understand, Hal is old school. Mm-hmm. Hal does not go wild on physical play. Mm-hmm. So that one really got to him. That made a mental thing for him. And Chris Mason's going to join us here. He felt the same way. Mm-hmm. That's a bad hit even if Carrier has the puck. Mm-hmm. You cannot hit a player when he doesn't have the puck.
Especially in the head. He hit him right in the head.
Unsuspecting, in the head. Mm-hmm. And as you heard Hal say, he followed through. Mm-hmm. Kaprizov is not a physical player. He's a skilled player. So the other part that happens there is he's not going to fight or anything. And so what do you do about that? Like, there has to be repercussions when a guy like that takes a run at a player that doesn't have the puck. Mm-hmm. And it stinks for Carrier because what's his reputation? He's got to stay out there. Mm-hmm. Like, he's good when he plays. He's in a contract year. He's fighting to get that next shot. He's trying to prove to everybody they can stay out there for 82 games. And then something like that out of his control, and it's a setback.
It was hard watching him try and skate off the
ice. He was dazed, for sure.
It was tough
to stay down for a while.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that the league will come back in a dress,
well,
is there a possibility? Because obviously, you know, they didn't do it on the ice. Yeah, they gave him a minor, but it should have been a little bit more than that.
I'm stunned. Right now, I'm looking at the NHL website. I am not seeing anything that says there will be a... Usually what you see is there will be a hearing or there, you know, something gets announced. I've seen nothing right now. And if that happens, I think if I'm the Predators, I'm even more... steamed that he basically got away with it with a minor penalty that he injured a player who didn't have the puck. So
why do you think it wasn't a 5 minute major? Why do you think, or him ejected?
I'll give you a simple answer, just a theory. Mm-hmm. They didn't see it. Okay. They didn't see it clearly enough. Uh-huh. They saw a guy go down, and they huddled up, and I guess nobody really saw the egregiousness of it, and in real time it happened so fast. Yeah. That's why
there was a lot of traffic around it too.
But that's why you go to the monitor. You heard Ryan O'Reilly and Andrew Brunette said the same thing after the game, and Ryan O'Reilly was out there talking to the officials as they were conferring.
So they can go to the monitor.
You can go. He said, call the 5 minute, look at it, and see if. See if what we think happened.
Okay. And correct me if I'm interpreting this wrong. In a hit like that, don't most refs defer to a 5 minute major, and then they'll go back and review it? And if they need to kind of diminish it down to a 2 minute minor, they can. Isn't that normally the norm?
I'm trying to remember the rule. This is a fairly recent thing that's been adjusted. I don't know if they can take it. I know that they can for a high stick, for example. Mm-hmm. And this happened to the Rangers the other night. Mm-hmm. A player got high-sticked. They called a four-minute minor. But when you call a four-minute minor, you can go look. Mm-hmm. to see if you got it right. And at that point, it's either 4 minutes or 0 minutes. And they determined that it was the Red Wings player that grabbed the Rangers player's stick and lifted it up into his face, okay. So they wiped it away. And so that's good usage of the monitor. These things happen super fast in this game. Hockey is a fast game. So I think when you have the ability to go look at it,
you should
take advantage of that. So I didn't think that was smart officiating there. But now, on top of that, no supplemental discipline, that's not good.
Especially when it is so widely known as we want to keep this sport as safe as it possibly can be, and those are the kind of hits that you want to take out of the game. Mm-hmm. Frustrating. And also, it's not the reason why the Predators lost.
Nah.
It's not the reason why they
looked
as
brutal
happen. As they did.
Right.
And it's a completely different side story in the larger story of how sluggish they looked last night, but bad officiating and a bad call from that officiating crew last night. I will be interested to hear C. Mace's perspective on it, though. He will join us here in just a few minutes, but let's get into some of your thoughts before we get to C. Mace. Our phone line is driven by WilsonCattyHyundai.com. Ben texts in, says, the Preds are pretenders. I don't really know how
pretenders
you can call...
Pretenders as opposed to what?
I don't really know how you can call a team that had pretty much zero expectations pretenders.
It's not like they came into the, came out of the offseason as one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup.
Right.
Then I can see, based upon the record and everything, they may be pretenders, but this team was never mentioned in the same sentence as the Stanley Cup,
right?
Run.
Like, if you want to call the Oilers pretenders,
maybe
we can have that conversation because they have two of the best players in the game. They have, fallen short of expectations, at least in the early part of the season. Preds didn't have any expectations. We came into the season thinking, hey, if you make the playoffs, cool, but if you don't, then that's okay, as long as we can see some progress, as long as we can now see that this franchise is heading in a different direction. I don't think it's fair to say pretenders after you go on a 6-game winning streak.
Yeah, I don't know how you determine that.
I think that this is, again, it always comes back to this conversation is, what are the expectations?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a full rebuild,
right?
But it's definitely a... making the playoffs this year is not the priority over strengthening the roster for the next 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And they've said that all along. And they have left the caveat, just like Andrew Burnett, he's in there fighting every day. Ryan O'Reilly, they want to win in the meantime if they can.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fair to say they would overachieve a little bit if they made the playoffs. And because of the bad start for the teams like the Oilers and the Wild, there's some playoff spots there for the taking. That's still the same today,
mm-hmm.
just like we said yesterday. But now that they've lost, they had a bad game, doesn't mean that the whole outlook has changed. It's really the same as it has been.
Right. We will chat with Chris Mason coming up next. We'll get his thoughts, what he saw from the Predators last night, encouraging signs he saw in that 6-game winning streak, and, of course, that Kaprizov hit. I thought it was a dirty, dirty, dirty hit. We'll chat with Chris Mason coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Joining us now is our friend Chris Mason. C. Mace's segment is brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C. Mace, appreciate you for joining us. Want to get your thoughts, what you saw with that Kaprizov hit last night. I thought it was dirty, and I'm shocked. I was shocked that it was not called for a major. What'd you see there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a dirty hit. I mean, the puck is by Carey, but he never, ever has possession of it. It goes by him, and he continues, he was running at him from the middle of the defensive zone, and he followed all the way through on his hit. It was a major cheap shot. And, we talked about it a bit on the broadcast, at the referee's discretion, and they have options where they can make sure that they get that right. I'll have to look more into it. I'm not sure if the NHL is going to look at it now, but you have the option, I believe, to call a major penalty and then go back and look at it and then downgrade it to a minor if you just deem it was interference like they'd call. But I mean, a play like that, try to take it out of football, out of hockey, you don't want to see guys get hurt. If it's a hockey play and a guy gets hurt, you live with it. That is sports. But when it's a play like that, you know, and he, you know, someone has to leave the game. And then the worst part is Kaprizov scores a couple minutes after he got out of the box for a 2 minute minor. So it's tough. It's tough to see that.
It was tough to watch Alexander Carrier try to skate off the ice last night. It was a tough one, and it's frustrating to see. It was also kind of frustrating for me to see the lack of energy that I felt like the Predators played with last night. I always say that it looked like they were skating through peanut butter last night. Andrew Burnett said it looked like they were kind of sleepwalking. What do you think that is? I mean, the Preds were just on a 6-game winning streak. They were feeling it. I felt like things were clicking. One loss doesn't completely change things, but what did you see from that perspective, just where that lack of energy maybe came from?
Yeah, they've had a tough schedule, but they've been at home. I think sometimes, and I know this as a player, when you have the level, you play the level of competition that the Predators have lately, Colorado's, the Calgary's, the Pittsburgh's, you know, you name it, you know, St. Louis is going to be tough. In St. Louis, there's a different level of preparation and maybe, I wouldn't say fear, but a level of readiness, because you know if you're not ready when you play those opponents, you know, bad things are going to happen. And if you're not ready, you could lose that hockey game in the first 10 minutes of a game. And then there's a dip when you play a team like Minnesota. You're like, oh, man, they got the last power play in the league. They're really struggling. Even though you say, hey, guys, these guys are going to be jacked up. They just got a new coach. Everybody, a lot of guys in the room know how that goes. In the back of your mind, I still feel like you think what's not going to be as tough as when you played Pittsburgh and you got Crosby and Malkin and all that kind of stuff going on. And once you get into that game, I just feel like they look like they're skating in quicksand. And Minnesota, I think, was the exact opposite. They've got that jump. They've got something to prove. They want to prove to their coach that they're the guy that, you know, should be out there in those situations. And it was evident. And I think it was a combination of the scale going the opposite way for both teams, and the Preds just could never get it going. And we kind of saw that. I felt a little bit like that. Willie and I were talking about in the Pittsburgh game. It was that kind of a game, and Pittsburgh, you know, wasn't necessarily, you know, the fastest team in terms of the way that they're playing the game, but the Preds didn't look quite as fast as they had. They still managed to win the game. And I think, you know, you're seeing a team that, you know, six wins is good. You know, it's not, they're not a 6 out of 7 win hockey team. They're probably somewhere in between. And eventually, you know, you're going to have that downswing. And I think we saw that against the Wild.
Yes, he may. The team just didn't, you know, it just wasn't their night last night. And to add insult to injury, you know, the hit on Carrier was uncalled for. And hopefully the league does something about it, because they sure enough didn't do it last night. With that being said, who do you expect for them to bring up now that Carrier may be down for a few days?
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, my initial thought would be Spencer Stastny, just because, you know, he got sent down just because it's a numbers game right now. Luke Shen coming back, and they obviously have every single one of their guys had been playing really well, and they're all NHL defensemen. So it was no indication of the way Stastny was going down. He's able, it doesn't have to clear waivers, so it's an easy move for them to make. If they want, you know, depth on defense, he's the guy. You know, for me, they got a lot of games coming up this next 2 weeks. I think 4 games every week, which is a lot of hockey. Shen's just coming back. He's probably not up to, you know, full 100% speed in terms of his conditioning and, you know, the ability to play the 15 to whatever minutes he needs to play. So I would expect Spencer Stastny. Liam Foudy will obviously go back in next game if they don't decide to do 7D, which I don't think that they will. Brunette said he doesn't want to make a habit of doing that. He's just trying to get, you know, Favreau back in, Shen back in, get him going. So it'll be interesting to see what they do lineup-wise. But if they're calling up a D, to me, it's got to be Spencer Stastny.
Now, with that being said, they got 2 back-to-backs this weekend, C-Mays. Should the Predators let UC get a rest? Last night was just it wasn't good for him. And obviously he's been the primary guy in the net, but you have 2 back-to-backs. Should Lankinen, do you expect at least Lankinen to get one of those? I expect he should, but if not one, should he get both?
And then which one? That's the other decision.
Well, that's the one. I wish I had a crystal ball for that. I do expect with 100%, I shouldn't say 100% certainty, because Mitch Corn, the old goalie coach, said the only thing for certain is nothing is for certain. So, but I would expect there's a great probability that Lankinen for sure will get a game. And you're right, I don't know what it'll be. It was tough to see, you know, Juice. He's every time he seems like he's getting to that level, like he's back. There's a game like that, and you know, some of it's bad luck, and some of it's just he's not at that level that we've all seen where he goes in there and it really doesn't matter what the other team does. Like, they're going to get one goal max, and they know it, and everybody in the building knows it. When he's at that level, he can, you know, get to that elite of a level where it's just it's complete domination, and he hasn't quite got there. And you know, a lot of it is the product around him was a big factor last night. They weren't good, they were slow, but again, he's capable of winning those games single-handedly. And this weekend will be very interesting. So as a starting goaltender, do you say, hey, just you know take the next game off? But as a goalie, you know, if you're UC Soros, he wants to play the next game. Mm-hmm. So he wants to be in net Saturday, and then you would go with Lankinen the next day in Buffalo. So that's kind of what I would expect to happen. Whether we do that or not, I don't know. Brunette's tendencies in regard to, you know, how he likes to work the goaltenders. I know Lankinen will get some time. He's earned that. He certainly deserves to get more playing time. But you got to make sure, first and foremost, you know, you're doing the right thing to get Juice's mind right and get him, you know, back to the level that everybody knows that he can get to.
Chris Mason is with us, and May's looking ahead, too. They've got a couple of back-to-backs coming up, and they continue to play basically every other night. So you figure Lankinen's going to be a part of this equation a lot, no matter how you slice it, and this is where the value of a backup goalie comes into play. There are some teams that don't feel great about their backup goalie, but if you wanted to make the argument, Lankinen, his last three starts have been afternoon starts, which tomorrow is, and he's played well in all three, including winning in Edmonton against the, you know, they were down at the time, but obviously a very explosive offense and played really well in that game. So I can see them at least considering Lankinen tomorrow, given the extra day for Soros, and then coming back with Soros on Sunday.
No, there's going to be a conversation. There's no question, and that's one of the things that, you know, in today's NHL, there's a lot of communication even between, goalie coach, goaltender, back to the coach to make these decisions to see how, you know, Juice feels. Sometimes they'll do that. Other times they'll just make the decision. I believe Soros was the one in net against the Rangers in New York.
Yes, played very well.
And he played very well, so that's also got to be taken into consideration. There's a lot of intangibles. You mentioned the afternoon games. That's certainly one that I know that they would look at. Home game versus road game, record against Buffalo. You know, all these things I think are going to be considered. I'm just speculating and guessing, but I would guess that Soros would play Saturday, but that's a guess. And you got a deadly team coming in with the Rangers that are really off to an unbelievable start.
And if you think about it, and you love conversations about goalies in general, but the backup goalie, especially when you start to appreciate how many games are coming here and the workload of Soros and a guy like Hellebuck, it's been talked about a lot as the years have passed here, recently especially. There have been a lot of people that say you need to play your backup more than you did 20, 30 years ago. So the backup goalie can mean the difference of, let's just say, 5 to 7 points over 82 games, and that's obviously the difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs in a lot of cases.
Exactly. A team like Nashville, that they're going to be fighting for, you know, a wild card spot. That's if they're going to get in, that's what they're going to have to do. And that's why it's tough to minimize that position to a backup, because that title, because when they play and they're in the net, those points, how many times do you see at the end of the season, it comes down to the last game of the year to get in or whatever the case may be. Those games that he plays have equal value of every game that Soros played. So, he is a massive part of this team. Bubble teams that don't have a good backup goaltender, and don't have a winning record or at least a 500 record really have no chance to get in the playoffs. And I think Lankinen, you know, he had that great rookie year in Chicago. Then they kind of went down the tubes there, in the tank there or whatever, and it was tough for any goaltender to have success there. And he reinvented himself when he came to Nashville and started working with Ben Vanderklok. And, you know, obviously the friendship and the relationship he has with Saros has been beneficial to his success. And he's become one of the most reliable backup goaltenders I think could be a starting goaltender in this league. So he is going to play an absolute massive role for this team throughout the season.
That's something that nobody really discusses here, is Lankinen's in the last year of his contract. We always talk about, could they trade Askarov, or will they get calls about Saros? It would be interesting to see what happens with Lankinen if he keeps playing the way he's played since he's been here, because I'm sure he aspires to be, he's only 28 years old, he aspires to be a starter in the league, just like a backup quarterback in the NFL would aspire to be. But before we let you go, Mace, I do want to say something. And look, I love Smashville. We were just commenting about, at the end of the game, there were still several thousand people there that were cheering when goal number 7 was wiped away for the overtime, for the offside challenge. Woo-hoo! I love that. That was great. They stayed all the way to the end, even though the game was well in hand at the time. But there were a cross-section of people that booed. Not a lot of people, but I could hear a few boos when they did the tribute video for John Hines, and I just don't get that. I just don't get it.
It kind of went sour, I think, the last couple years at the end, and you want somebody to blame, and unfortunately it was him, I think, and Cole Smith last year, which he didn't deserve, but you know how that goes, right? I think personally, you know, if you have those types of issues, just let it go and just, you know, clap. This is my opinion. Everybody's obviously entitled to do whatever they want, but
right. I didn't expect a huge standing ovation, emotional, like it was for Barry Trotz, right? Most people did.
But booing to me in that situation where the guy came in here, you know, left it all on the line, did everything he could. And quite honestly, a lot of it was, not in his control, to be honest with you. Tough to see that, especially we know him on a personal level. And how much he cared and how much he put into it. And so that, you know, that kind of stung a little bit. But hey, I mean, everyone's entitled to do whatever they want. But I didn't love that.
Last one for you, Mace. What do you make of the job that Andrew Burnett has done so far? We've seen a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, a little bit of really good, a little bit of really bad. So what is your evaluation of him and the system and how the team looks so far?
I think if I look at the big picture of it, I love the responsibility he's giving to his players. I think he's got really good communication with his leadership group that I think is doing a phenomenal job in molding a lot of these young players. You know, Phil Tomasino was just talking about how much he's learned from Ryan O'Reilly, how they're different players, but, you know, O'Reilly's a guy who's going to bring these guys along and work with them and, you know, teach a guy like Phil Tomasino, who's maybe in his career not been around the net as much because he's been able to have success other ways. And you're starting to see that in his play. And, you know, a lot of that has to do, I think, with, Burnett using his leadership, group the right way. He's still getting to learn a lot of these players in these situations. And sometimes you don't know, everything you need to know when you're winning about, you know, you win 6 games in a row, everyone's playing awesome. It's easy, right? So you need to kind of go through through the mud a little bit, I think, to find out what people are really made of. When somebody gets scratched, that's maybe not used to being scratched. How do they, you know, respond, and how do they come to the rink every day? Are they going to, you know, sulk, or are they going to come back and, with a chip on their shoulder, do the right things? And when they get back in the lineup, they're ready to go. And I think he's had a lot of success in that department with Evangelista, Trennan, Phil Tomasino, some of the defensemen, Dante Fabro, you know, he's playing well. So I think there's still an evaluation process going on with him and the team, just like I think there is with this team. You mentioned all the stages and things we've seen. Mm-hmm. I don't think we quite know exactly what this team is or who they are. I think we've seen their identity. It's a very hardworking team. Whether they play, you know, like last night, they were slow. They weren't good, mm-hmm. but it wasn't from a lack of effort. They're out there giving their all, and it wasn't good last night. It just didn't work. So I respect that. And I like when I'm watching a team and covering a team, you can live with those kind of games if the effort's there. even though it wasn't a good hockey game on their part. So I think a lot of that has to do with the coach as well. So I think so far he's done a really good job with this group.
Chris Mason, appreciate you as always. Thanks for joining us, Mace. We'll chat with you next week.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Chris Mason, he is the very best. We'll get your thoughts on this coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Andrew, was tonight lack of execution, lack of energy, combination of the two? How'd you see this one?
Yeah, I think we lack of execution, lack of will. We knew coming in we're facing a really hungry team that is going to be highly motivated, and we didn't match the intensity, and when you don't match the intensity, so you don't win too many nights.
All right, that was Predators head coach Andrew Brunette. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, we will chat with Bob Kravitz in 10 minutes. He's been covering the Indianapolis Colts for a long time, so we'll get his perspective. I'm interested to hear an outsider that's still close to the team's perspective on what's been going on with the Tennessee Titans, his perspective on Mike Vrabel, so we'll chat with him in 10 minutes. Also, speaking of the Titans, if you would like to watch a 2019 Titans-Jags game that is currently on NFL Network.
But it's on a loop for the first half.
It's over and over again.
The first half for whatever reason.
Because
I don't
it's
know.
Such a good first half that you just have to keep watching it over and over again.
Not for the Titans, it's not good. It was 14-0.
Yeah, it was total sarcasm.
I am mystified. Like, this is like Twilight Zone. Yeah. What is going on at NFL Network right now? Because, first of all, why are they showing that game? That's the Adoree Jackson game in the rain on a Thursday night where he muffed a couple of punts, put him in a big hole. Mm-hmm. Gardner Minshew leads them to victory. And this is the beginning of the end pretty much of the Marcus Mariota era. And, of course, that's 2019. Tannehill takes over. They make a run to the AFC Championship game. Why are they showing this game exactly?
I have no idea.
And it keeps looping
the
same plays. I wonder how long they're going to keep doing that.
I have no idea. Hopefully.
At 8 o'clock tonight, are they still going to be showing the last 2 minutes of the first half
of
this game?
Just to make sure that everybody could watch it.
Absolutely.
Mike Vrabel does have an outstanding mustache, though.
He does.
Yeah. At that time.
And he has the little spike things, you know.
Yeah, it's raining, and so his hair's all wet.
Bangs.
Yeah. He got a little bangs.
Yeah, <it's, laughs> he has no rise
like
to the hair.
Bangs. Yeah.
It's, the rain is causing the bangs to go down. It's quite the look.
Bangs.
He looks like an infant baby. Yeah. And it was like 4 years ago. And I'm like, who is that man? Is that Mike Vrabel's son? My goodness.
And for all those that want to know, Tennessee High School Football, East Nashville currently is losing by 35 points to Alcoa, 42-7.
If I remember,
that's what the
third
game
quarter
felt like last night, 6-1.
Yeah,
whenever
exactly.
the seventh
that's your
called
that's,
back.
That's your hood. That,
that's my guys. My
that's
guys.
Your
that,
hood,
that's
man.
Right in my backyard. And they have done a great job there. Mm-hmm. I think this is a rematch from
last
year.
Were they 11-1 this season?
Yes, and I think they made this game last year. Alcoa is. They're just
powerhouse.
A machine
yeah.
Over the years. I know Gary Rankin was at Riverdale for a long time, went over to Alcoa. They've got their system of getting played. But they've always been seemingly a juggernaut every year. They've got like one of those magnet kind of effects where everybody kind of gravitates over there. I think it's open enrollment.
Uh-huh.
A little different than East Nashville, who does a tremendous job with the resources they have. I love it's always lit up. I know when they're playing. And so on Friday nights, I always drive by. There's always people watching there. They've put together a really good program, but it's not their day-to-day. It doesn't look like
Alcoa, when I was in high school, all 4 years, they won the state title.
Oh, wow. They're just there every year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonder if they could beat the Titans.
East or Alcoa? Which one?
Both. Alcoa. Yeah, right. All right, let's get some of your Predators thoughts before we get to Bob Kravitz. Dave and Brentwood, and a lot of texters have texted in the text line, Willie, about what comes next with that hit. Dave and Brentwood said, isn't it up to the Predators at this point to submit that hit to the league for review?
I don't think that's how it works. The Department of Player Safety... And I listen to their talk every year. They are nice enough to bring the announcers in and sort of explain how the system works. And they say they watch all the games, and if they see something like that, they will make note of it, and they will proceed accordingly. So I don't think it's up to the Predators to submit it. Mm-hmm. Now, the Predators can, I guess, on their own, if they don't like how it was called, they can certainly talk to the officials, they can talk to the league, get an explanation. But as far as the Department of Player Safety, that's the jurisdiction of supplementary discipline. George Peros is the guy that heads it up. I'm not seeing anything. It's awfully quiet. There is a hearing for a player on the Devils for something that happened in a recent game, Brendan Smith. And let's see. And that was a game that happened last night. So usually if you see something, if something's going to happen, it usually happens the next day before the teams play again.
I just want to know what more
so
do they
I don't understand.
See?
Yeah, I know.
It's, what more needed to happen?
I've been frustrated before with, and I know Predator fans, that they can go back through the list of plays. One of them that jumps out to me years ago, J.P. Dumont, still lives here. He got absolutely cheap shot by one of the biggest villains ever, Alexander Burrows, for the Canucks. I just remember I was younger at the time, still learning how the process were. I was absolutely aghast that nothing happened to Burrows. Like, you got to be kidding me. There was a brawl after it happened. Like, that was a cheap shot. It just, like, it broke JP's teeth in the middle. Oh, I mean, it was awful.
Ugh, gross. Yeah. All right, we'll chat with Bob Kravitz coming up next. He covers the Indianapolis Colts for BobKravitz.com. I'm interested. We'll, of course, talk about this Titans-Colts matchup, but I'm interested to see his perspective, what he is seeing from the outside looking in, the current state of the Tennessee Titans. We'll get into that coming up next with Bob Kravitz, Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.